And during the few moments that we have left, we want to have just an off-the-cuff chat between you and me. Us. We want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Once you are enslaved and once you are in servitude, you have no moral obligation to the people who have enslaved you. In enslaving you, they have freed you of all moral obligation because the nature of their enslavement of you says that you are without humanity, without manhood, without womanhood, without dignity. And anything you do to get those things back is morally justified.
The struggle for survival in the United States is the handling of this never-ending tension between the institutional values of race, gender, and wealth, which give undue and unearned privileges and advantages to some so that others cannot compete on an equal basis for the resources of this country.
Our people have resisted for 413 years in this wilderness, and they resisted for this generation to carry out what must be done. We cannot fail our ancestors.
There's already so much evidence that we are waking up, beginning to acknowledge the reality. Something stinks.
And we are going to have to fight, we're going to have to struggle, we're going to have to struggle religiously to bring about some peace, because the people that we're asking for peace, they're a bunch of big little maniac warmongers, and they don't even understand what peace means. We've got to fight them, we've got to struggle with them, and make them understand what peace means.
Everybody knows that all the people don't have liberty, all the people don't have freedom, all the people don't have justice, and all the people don't have power, so that means none of us do. Take this country and change it. Turn it upside down and put the last verse and the first last.
The preservation of history is a primary responsibility of any people.
There is only one answer. Only one answer. Revolution. Full revolution.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Yes, indeed. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Legacy Edition of We Ourselves. I'm Jared Ball, your host. Happy to be here with you. And most importantly, you're tuned in to the Liberated Masses medium of WPFW 89.3 FM. And in just a moment, we're going to be joined by Michael McCray and Tom Devine, and then you in the second half of the program for a discussion of whistleblowing. Given all that's going on in the world and in the country with the occupation movements, given all that's going on in Greece and other parts of the world, and even the lesser known uprisings over the past year in places like Senegal and other parts of the world, and the importance of insider information to the dissemination of knowledge about the inner workings of those in power in the corporate world that dominates our entire environment, both intellectual and physical. It's important that we be able to have some discussion of what it means to be a whistleblower and how important that is to, again, our understanding of the world and those who run it. So we're going to do that this morning, again, with our guests, and I'll be back in just a minute to introduce them. But first of all, let me just say, let me just give you a couple of updates real quick. Net for Freeman, our own beloved brother, who, you know, WPFW's own, and one of the this year's recipients of an Activist of the Year award, well-deserved, wants me to remind everybody that on November 7th, the Institute for Policy Studies will be hosting a discussion, a brown bag discussion about Venezuela, heavy oil, and renewable energy transition. That is on November 7th from 12 to 1:30 p.m. at the Institute for Policy Studies conference room, which is at 1112 16th Street Northwest, Sweet 600. Again, that's a brown bag discussion about Venezuela, heavy oil, and renewable energy transition. November 7th, 12 to 1:30 p.m. at the IPS Conference Room at 1112 16th Street Northwest, Suite 600. And as you heard just a moment ago from Brother John Chambers talking about Bloom Bars with Gloria Minot, there is going to be a very powerful event going on tonight, and we're going to honor that in just a moment. Before we get into our discussion with our esteemed guests about whistleblowing, but Asheru and Blue Black, the sort of a powerful reunion, not only in terms of hip hop, but in terms of conscious artistic expression, something that we don't get to hear enough of in a media environment dominated by a corporate world that needs more whistleblowing and insider information. And we have a couple of shows coming up to deal with that specifically. So I'll let you know about that as we get more of those things organized. But anyway, so come on out tonight, 9:30, to Bloom Bars, and check out Asheru and Blue Black. As they have a reunion, Unspoken Herd is the name of the crew. And as they say, and as Asheru says in a moment, and you'll hear just in a moment, again, similar to the anti-whistleblowing, when the revolution starts, all they'll probably do is squeal. So don't go anywhere. Much more coming up right here on the Legacy Edition of We Ourselves. I'm Jared Ball. But most importantly, you're tuned in to the mighty liberated masses medium of WPFW 89.3 FM. Don't go anywhere. Back in a minute with Tom Devine and Michael McCray, a discussion of whistleblowing that you cannot afford to miss. Back in a minute. Peace.
It's been a long time coming, had a long ride running through my head all morning since the early crack of dawn, and seeing omens as a warning, sticking out like an awning in places they don't belong. My premonition is strong. Don't feel right when bearers no better but do the opposite. They claiming they go getters, but what? This profit get for more money, more problems. We break bread as if we have pockets with no bottoms. Can't be further from the truth, like words spit in the booth. Mix down, package the ship, then market it to the youth. But the real disconnect is when goes unchecked. Words become acts and kids lack respect. Society points the finger, artists collect the check. Any attempts to balance things out, we reject. We celebrate death like we know the end is near. I can't tell if it's fair or if we truly don't care. But me, I'm for the living, live the art that I'm given. Give my heart, that's a given, do my part, cause I'm driven from the start. I've been hitting with anti-nonsense, and critics be so quick to label it conscience. Okay, you got me, even though it's not me completely. I see you wanna box me neatly, treat me as if what I'm saying ain't really real.
When we start the revolution, all they probably do is squeal.
Yes, indeed. WPFW 89.3. Just a little bit of Asheru and the Revolution. Again, you can check them out tonight at Bloom Bars at 9:30. Something that should not be missed, to the extent that it's possible not to. Anyway, let's turn to our discussion this morning. We want to welcome to the airwaves again Michael McCray, who is known as a tenacious advocate and champion for the underdog, one who fights for the rights of others, a national board member of the federally employed Women Legal Education Fund. Michael McCray champions human rights, including social and economic justice for all Americans, including Black people, women, and so-called minorities. Michael McCray is a lawyer, accountant, and former federal whistleblower, and the co-chair of the International Association of Whistleblowers, the only public interest group that is made of, by, and for individual whistleblowers. Michael supports federal workers' rights and strong protections, including legislative and judicial reform for federal whistleblowers, America's unsung heroes. The IAW, that is the International Association of Whistleblowers, is a sponsoring organization for Washington Whistleblower Week. And we'll also be welcoming Tom Devine, who has worked with the Government Accountability Project since January of 1979. Mr. Devine has assisted in over 5,000 whistleblowers in defending themselves against retaliation and in making a difference, such as shuttering accident-prone nuclear power plants, checkmating repeated industry ploys to deregulate government meat inspection, and blocking the next generation of the bloated and porous Star Wars missile defense systems. He has been a leader in the campaigns to pass or defend the 20 major national international whistleblower laws, including everyone enacted over the last two decades. These include the Whistleblower Protection Act of 1989 for federal employees, 7 breakthrough laws since 2002 creating the right to jury trials for corporate whistleblowers, and the new United Nations, World Bank, and African Development Bank policies legalizing public freedom of expression for their own whistleblowers. Mr. Devine has served as ambassador of whistleblowing in over a dozen nations on trips sponsored by the U.S. State Department. He has authored or co-authored numerous books, including Courage Without Martyrdom and the Whistleblower's Survival Guide, law review articles and newspaper op-eds, and is a frequent expert commentator on television and radio talk shows. Mr. Devine is the recipient of the Hugh Hefner First Amendment Award and the Defender of the Constitution Award bestowed by the Fund for Constitutional Government. In 2006, he was inducted into the Freedom of Information Act Hall of Fame. He is a Phi Beta Kappa honors graduate at Georgetown University and earned his JD from Antioch School of Law. Gentlemen, welcome both of you to the program. Good morning.
Good morning, Dr. Ballin. Good morning, Washington, D.C.
Mr. McCray, can we start with you, please? Give us an overview of just what you mean or what is meant by whistleblowing, and what the work of the International Association of Whistleblowers does, and maybe some of the latest work that we need to be informed about going on right now.
Okay, Dr. Ball, that's a great question. In my opinion, what the term really expresses is when Americans exercise their freedom of speech rights and speak out against whether it's corporate corruption or government abuse. So at its core, whistleblowers are people of conscience. You know, these are people that are trying to do the right thing, and sometimes it may involve themselves, and sometimes it may involve the public interest. But overall, it's a person who speaks out, tries to speaks truth to power, and then suffers retaliation for their speech. And again, in my opinion, it's different from, say, someone who, Sammy the Bull, you know, someone who gets pinched by the cops and then becomes an informant. So I think the quintessential essence of whistleblowing is doing the right thing when you have an opportunity to speak out and then facing consequences for it. That's the key element to whistleblowing.
So it's almost like the difference between incarceration and political incarceration, to the extent that not all prisoners are in fact themselves there for political purposes, but sort of that
right.
distinction,
that's
small distinction.
And the only reason that I bring up the distinction, Dr. Ball, is there is, you know, sometimes whistleblowing, it's a mixed brand. You know, some people are I won't say pro-whistleblowing, but, you know, some people think of whistleblowers as snitches, some whistleblowers are informants, but ultimately the way that we operate at the International Association of Whistleblowers, true whistleblowers are people of conscience. They're the people that, you know, what is it, the Edmund Burke's The Triumph of Evil, you know, all that's necessary for evil to prevail is for good people to do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Whistleblowers
mm-hmm.
are the people who don't stand by and idly by and sit on their hands. Mm-hmm. Whistleblowers are the people that step up and speak up, and they often are retaliated and discriminated against.
And Tom Devine, what would you add to that definition, or what might you add in terms of some more immediate issues or cases that you're working on that may or may not be more or less known to the general public?
I think Mike described the phenomenon very well, excellently, probably in part because he's lived it and been a whistleblower himself, so he knows the territory. An informant or a snitch doesn't need protection against retaliation. The people that we help are people challenging abuses of power that betray the public trust. They're the ones who face reprisal and harassment and persecution. And as far as the cases we're working on, it just covers the map from the government engaging in domestic surveillance against all Americans domestically, not just people from other countries that we can show have ties with terrorists. It's all the spending and pork barrel boondoggles that the Tea Party said they were running against during the last election, but we're waiting to see if they're going to protect the people who actually live their rhetoric and risk their careers to fight indefensible spending that oftentimes is just like welfare for big business. They've been extremely effective in challenging public health and safety threats. For example, one of my clients, Dr. David Graham, challenged Vioxx, a super painkiller, according to the that the FDA, Food and Drug Administration, officially decreed as safe. Thanks to Dr. Graham, we learned that it was a killer painkiller, that it caused 50,000 unnecessary fatal heart attacks of elderly Americans, about as many Americans as died in the Vietnam War, only this one from something that our drug said, that our Food and Drug Administration said was safe, sort of a propaganda reassurance. These are the people who change the course of history. They keep our society from being stagnant or being in ruts. Even if they're not right, they keep the power structure on its toes, and they're just very, very badly needed. And what's been exciting to me is over the last decade, we've had a legal revolution in corporate free speech rights. Since 2002, there have been almost a dozen new laws covering almost the entire private sector that give gold standard rights to corporate whistleblowers, access to court and jury trials, and protection against gag orders. But the federal employees, the ones who have the direct power over our families and over our citizens, they still can be pretty much fired at will. Whistleblowing is the sound of professional suicide to them. And for the last 12 years, Mike and GAP and really about 400 organizations we've gotten the petition drive up to have been fighting to overhaul the federal whistleblower laws and give them the same sort of rights that the private sector employees do. And yesterday we had a big victory in a battle for that. The House Government Oversight Committee passed landmark legislation, approved landmark legislation to upgrade the rights of government workers under the Whistleblower Protection Act by a 35-0 vote. This ranged from the scope of the consensus was just breathtaking, from the more liberal members of Congress like Dennis Kucinich and Chris Van Hollen to the most conservative members of Congress. The head of the Republican Steering Committee, which is the ultra-conservative branch of the conservative House of Representatives. Daryl Issa, who is usually, his last name is sometimes like a four-letter word to liberals or progressives or activists. He was leading the way to get these free speech rights for the government employees. And in fact, challenging the House Intelligence Committee, which is going to be our big struggle this fall, to make sure that those free speech rights cover whistleblowers in the intelligence agencies, like the National Security Agency or the CIA or the DIA, the people who may be the most significant, both to fighting terrorism the proper way, through being prepared, but also defending Americans against freedom, threats to our own freedom from our own government. It's people from those agencies that revealed blanket domestic surveillance that's still going on in this country, and we need them in the public's eyes and ears.
You know, Tom Devine, we're talking with Tom Devine and Michael McRae about issues with, involving whistleblowing right here on the Legacy Edition of We Ourselves, and more importantly on WPFW 89.3 FM. True liberated masses media, unlike what most will find in their media environment. But Tom Devine, just very quickly, I do have to ask, you know, for those of us whose sort of flags are peaked or flags raised when we see people sent around the world on behalf of the State Department, how does that work in terms of the work that you're doing, or how did that work at, you know, when you had that relationship, this idea that the State Department would how does the State Department or the state itself benefit from having you go around the world and talk about these kinds of cases of whistleblowing?
I had to chuckle a little bit. The State Department is enthusiastically in favor of free speech reforms in other countries, much more than it is than it's tolerant for those same rights by its own employees. But they put on good presentations, and I'm glad to talk about freedom of speech whenever the opportunity arises. In fact, the State Department funnels through visiting groups from other countries several times a month, and GAP's on the step that introduces them to whistleblower protection and advocates campaigns for freedom of speech where it counts. And usually when I take those trips, it's because some of the foreign visitors said, we're excited about this idea, and they asked the State Department to send me and give the same programs to NGOs and citizens' organizations and media and universities and government agencies in their home countries.
Just so folks know, I have a couple more questions for our guests, and in about 10 minutes, we're going to take a quick break and open up the phone lines at 202-588-0893 so that our most highly esteemed audience can take part in this conversation. Michael McCray, you are also the national spokesman for the ACORN 8, a watchdog organization dedicated to seeking truth, transparency, and accountability for the Association of Community Organizations for Reform Now, or ACORN. A lot had come out in recent last couple of years about ACORN, the hit job campaign by the right, and sort of a destruction of that powerful organization. But as someone as you, who is also the author of ACORN 8, Memories of an ACORN Whistleblower, tell us a little bit about that. Tell us a little bit about that book maybe the experience with ACORN. And what the status of all of that damage is today.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Ball. First, let me piggyback on something that Tom just said.
Sure.
That to me is very important. And as we talk about, they're still dealing with federal whistleblower rights. In a time when we're talking about these huge budget deficits, and we're using the budget deficit as a excuse to cut flash programs that help low-income and moderate-income people, The Congress always says that when they're going to slash the budget, that they're going to cut waste, fraud, and abuse in the federal government. Well, it simply can't be done without the whistleblowers. I mean, these are the people that are pointing out where the waste, the fraud, and abuse is, and these are the people that, again, as Tom just said, really commit professional suicide by speaking out and trying to bring that attention to the public, to the media, and even to Congress. You have senators like Chuck Grassley that says that, you know, whistleblowers are the key element that allows Congress to actually perform its oversight duties. So that's a significant point that people have to be aware of. In order for you to actually have that oversight, and not to say that, you know, the media isn't doing everything that it can, but you need the insiders, the people that are actually, you know, that are actually making the sausage, to tell you what's really going on, so that you know it's in your breathless link, so to speak. But switching back to the story of ACORN, I was a national board member of ACORN. I was the spokesperson for the ACORN 8, and essentially those were the board members that actually stood up to corruption within ACORN's management. Now, they weren't the people that were a lot of the ACORN was harmed by a lot of conservative hijinks, but the ACORN 8 were true whistleblowers. They weren't trying to destroy ACORN. They were trying to reform ACORN. When they were notified of about a lot of financial mismanagement and wrongdoing, these were the people that stood up and tried to right the organization before it collapsed. And so it's interesting to me that when we talk about that story, you know, I'm kind of a little bit critical of the right and the left. The left didn't want to hear the truth about ACORN because it was an unsettling truth that dealt with, you know, a Democratic ally. The right really didn't want to hear the whole truth about ACORN because it wasn't so much about, you know, the whole Obama bashing and whatnot. You know, the right kind of preferred to deal with, in my opinion, what are really red herrings. You know, a lot of the issues with Obama, a lot of these false allegations of voter fraud. But the true issue in ACORN was actually the exploitation of the low and moderate income families and communities that it was founded to serve. And that's actually what the book is about. The book is called The ACORN 8, Race, Power, and Politics, and it's memoirs of an ACORN whistleblower. And it'll be out in February of 2012. And actually, Tom Devine has been so gracious as to actually write the foreword for me. So, you know, you've got us both on the line.
Okay. Well, let me ask.
I was very lucky to get to write that forward. Everyone who's listening to your show should read this book. Whistleblowers Fight Abuses of Power. And power is a very corrupting thing. I think of it like the Ring and the Tolkien trilogy. And Mike's book is just fascinating, how almost like a a Greek or Shakespearean tragedy being played out by people in the front lines of how an organization created by a brilliant organizer who figured out the guerrilla activist tactics to consistently beat Goliath, huge multinational corporations that Acorn took out and defeated, but couldn't handle the power himself and ended up nearly ruining the organization because of becoming addicted to power and abandoning all the values that the organization seemed to stand for. That's the story of Mike's book.
Well, let me ask you this.
An eyewitness to it, but you just can't put it down.
Let me ask you this, because I want to get in a couple more questions before we open up the phone lines here. And one of those, Mr. McCray, you mentioned the sort of people not wanting to, or the attack on Obama or the focus on Obama. But I wanted to ask you both because when I looked, when I've been paying somewhat attention to this over the last year or so, but when I looked it up in preparation for today, I mean, there's a lot of people who are concerned with what is described as Obama's wars on whistleblowers, that he is, in fact, being accused by what appears to be a number of folks on the left, including Glenn Greenwald, of being worse than even the Bush administration on attacking whistleblowers, particularly those in the government and intelligence agencies, as you said, Tom, a moment ago, that are essential to us having any idea of what's going on or what is being done in advance, hopefully in advance of it having a negative impact on the people being targeted. And I kind of wanted to blend that with a question about as sort of what would you might maybe say to folks engaged in this increasing international occupation movement, as it's called, in terms of being prepared for what, certain backlashes or potentially needing whistleblower protections themselves in dealing with the ways in which this movement is being dealt with itself or the inner workings of what may become a more organized movement, so on and so forth. But specifically this question of, and also sort of connected in that way that many of those who are criticizing Wall Street now are in some way directly or indirectly having to confront the fact that the president that many of them elected was the most heavily Wall Street funded presidential candidate in the history of elections. So how does his, or that is Barack Obama's situation in this whistleblower, as it's been described, war on whistleblowers, sit as you all see it? Mr. McCray, I'll start with you.
Okay. Well, Dr. Ball, I think the fairest thing I can say about that is this, is that the historical election of Barack Obama in 2008, it was almost, other than, hope and change, there were very few concrete promises that were actually made, really, really to anybody. And a lot of the, I think, some of the deflated expectations have arisen from the fact that every progressive, every minority, every liberal, every Democrat saw in Barack what they wanted to see. And so it really was totally impossible to be everything to everybody. So I think part of, that's a critique that I think goes across the board. As it relates to the whistleblower community, I think that early meetings with the transition team and early meetings with the campaign team fostered some belief. Again, we felt like nobody could be worse than President Bush. And so I think the expectation level was very high, even though there had been no concrete arrangement.
But in fact, I'm sorry to interrupt, but it, in fact, as Linda Green points out in a counterpunch.org article, since he became president, Obama, acting under the Espionage Act, has indicted five whistleblowers who allegedly leaked sensitive government information. The New York Times reported on June 11th that in 17 months in office, President Obama has already outdone every previous president in pursuing leak prosecutions. So as you said, that those were hoping that thinking that nobody could be worse than Bush. In fact, in this case, and in several others, actually, Obama has been worse than Bush.
Well, no, Dr. Bell, I started off saying, let me be fair. So that's okay. That's putting the caveat out there that there was possibly some unrealistic expectations for the whistleblower community and Democrats in general. Now, as a whistleblower watching what's happening to the community, I agree with the criticism that you just read. Is that a lot of stuff didn't happen again, we have, he's very strong in foreign policy and defense, but, you know, part of state secrets and, you know, all the things that I kind of fight against, because as Tom just described, the corrupting elements of power, you know, it's really been bad. And so there's a backlash might be too strong, but there's definite disappointment in the whistleblower community about the policies and what we're actually getting from the Obama administration. And we feel that, you know, a lot of the national security whistleblowers are, we feel like they're being abused.
Let's take a pause right here. We'll come back with our guests, and we'll let Tom Devine respond to that particular point, if he'd like, on the other side of this quick break. And we'll open up the phones. We have a couple of lines open right now, 202-588-0893, 202-588-0893, for a discussion of whistleblowers with Tom Devine and Michael McCray, experts in the history and the goings-on surrounding whistleblowing in the United States. So don't go anywhere. Much more coming up right here on the Legacy edition of We Ourselves on the mighty, mighty PFW.
Scooter Magruder, your blues computer, asking you to join me for a rockin' good time at WPFW's second annual U Street Jam. Come party with James Funk, Texas Fred, the Zydeco Cowboy, Angie Bray, and of course, yours truly, as we dance the night away at Prince Hall on U Street Saturday, November 12th, starting at 8 p.m. Now, if you want tickets, visit us online at WPFW.org or call the WPFW membership hotline at 202-588-0999, extension 344. Yes, that's 202-588-0999, extension 344. Come and join us November 12th, starting at 8 p.m., the U Street Jam, baby. Come on, party with us.
We're gonna have a funk.
Power to all of the people right here on the Legacy edition of We Ourselves, the mighty, mighty, mighty liberated masses medium of WPFW 89.3 FM. Just a little bit there from Bobby Seale, and underneath that, Terrence Blanchard's Whistleblower from the film She Hate Me, which actually did deal and began with an important case of whistleblowing that got buried beneath, you know, the quite actually interesting film by Spike Lee about sexual politics, gender politics, sexual politics, and reproduction. Very, what I thought a very interesting film. We're talking about whistleblowing this morning with two guests, Tom Devine, the Government Accountability Project, and Michael McCray, author, whistleblower, and worker with the International Association of Whistleblowers. We do have a couple of people waiting on the line to get into the conversation, but Tom Devine, if you had a response to my last question on the other side of the break and wanted to offer one, I did want to give you an opportunity to do so.
Well, thank you very much. And GAP, I think, has very strong credentials to challenge President Obama, because we were the lawyers for Tom Drake, the NSA whistleblower that government tried to prosecute. I've got a little bit more balanced perspective, and I think it's kind of a cheap shot to say that he's at war with whistleblowers. In fact, in my 33 years experience, I've never seen a president so hard for their rights. The Obama administration inherited the Drake case, and when our coalition confronted the president in the White House, the Oval Office, that Drake hadn't leaked any classified documents. He worked within the system. The case was essentially dropped, withdrawn for just crumbs of community service after initially a big prosecution. And I don't know if that's what caused it, but that was the only case that involved a legitimate whistleblower. All the rest were kind of indiscriminate leaks of classified documents, and that's not covered by the whistleblower laws. You need to work lawfully and kind of respect those boundaries. Go to Congress or to the Inspector General if the documents are classified, not to WikiLeaks. None of the laws even contemplate that. As far as the laws for lawful exercise of freedom of speech, whistleblowers have never had anybody like President Obama. He's appointed by far the strongest, most pro-free speech activist throughout their careers to head all the agencies that implement the current federal laws. They supported gold standard rights for the corporate whistleblowers fighting Wall Street, and then gave a Labor Department board that has been ruling in their favor regularly when they have to test their rights. His law school roommate personally headed, was White House counsel for ethics, personally headed the drive to get jury trials into this new whistleblower legislation, right on the front lines with us. He'd be calling after midnight to work out strategy, how to overcome the opposition and secure these free speech rights. It's never, nothing like that has ever before happened in my experience. So I think it's an I applaud Mike for saying, let's be fair, and give some credit where it's due and not pull our punches where he's got them coming.
Oh, that's an important point. I'm just looking here again at the Salon.com piece by Glenn Greenwald, who is highlighting sort of an oppositely, if I could say it that way, described tale of Obama's administration's relationship to whistleblowers. And he concludes that what makes this trend, and well, he says two things. He says, hence, we have a series of aggressive prosecutions from the Obama administration of Bush-era exposures of abuse and illegality, acts that flagrantly violate Obama's look-forward, not backward decree used to protect high-level Bush administration criminals. As John Cole has suggested, perhaps if these whistleblowers had tortured some people and illegally eavesdropped on others, they would receive the immunity that Obama has so magnanimously and selectively granted. Instead, they merely expose the secret government corruption and illegality to the world. And then he concludes, what makes this trend of escalated anti-whistleblower activity particularly notable is that Obama, during his career in the Senate and when running for president, feigned serious support for whistleblowers. Today, Department of Justice whistleblower Jesselyn Raddick, while pointing out that Bush harassed whistleblowers mercilessly, but Obama is prosecuting them and sending them to jail, notes that Obama previously made comments like this one, saying that in terms of protecting whistleblowers, that such acts of courage and patriotism, which can sometimes save lives and often taxpayer dollars, should be encouraged rather than stifled. So they're arguing that he's doing the exact opposite. But as you point out, or at least suggest, that there's another way of looking at that. But I did just want to ask you both that question. But if we could, let's go ahead and let a couple callers get in. And then as you feel necessary, you can respond to what I've said in conjunction to what they've said. But I don't want to further punish them for their patience, if at all possible. And again, you're listening to the Legacy Edition of We Ourselves. I'm Jared Ball. And most importantly, this is WPFW 89.3 FM. Caller, thanks for your patience. Welcome to the air with Tom Devine, Michael McRae, and yours truly. Call.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning. You're on the air.
Oh, yes, I didn't realize I was on the air. Good morning, gentlemen. Great show this morning. I just wanted to say that outside the realm and the parameters of federal employees, contractors, and elected officials, you rarely hear, one of the guests basically touched on the whistleblower protection that emanated from the Lincoln presidency under T. Tom. I'm sure that you probably would like to go into that in a little more detail. But the fact that wherein there may be torts and direct civil litigation and specific liability of federal government or its contractors and so forth, I find that it's rarely spoken about that people get whistleblower protection or even coverage. In fact, many of them have run into massive resistance, others that I've spoken to, including myself. So when we're talking about not just people on the job who see, people stealing pencils and paper clips, but something that's much more broad-reaching than that can go specifically under the radar, and in many cases, decidedly so by the larger society. I think in some cases, people get the government they deserve, even when a whistleblower seeks to do a public good. Could you speak to the torts and civil litigation, federal liability aspects, quid tom, and whistleblower protection, please?
Thank you very much for that call, Tom.
I can help on that. The False Claims Act is what the caller is referring to. And it was first passed by President Lincoln and updated in 1986. And it's America's most effective anti-corruption statute. It allows whistleblowers to do more than make noise. They can actually file whistleblowing lawsuits to challenge fraud in government contractors. And since we deputized them, allowed them to actually fight the battles instead of just raising the points, our average recoveries against civil fraud in government contracts have gone up from about $10 to $20 million a year in 1970s and 80s to over $1 billion a year in the 25 years since, and it's been like over $3 billion the most per year in the most recent one. Very effective statute, and it proves how much difference these people can make if we just give them a chance to. And that kind of leads into a theme that I'd like to add to your previous question about the citizens' movement and Occupy Wall Street and different cities. And that's the next wave for us in whistleblower protection, is going beyond the boundaries of just job free speech rights to free speech rights for all American citizens who blow the whistle on abuses of power by companies or our government. And I'd say a good primer on that is to plug a book that I just put out called, Gap just put out, The Corporate Whistleblower's Survival Guide, a handbook for committing the truth. You can find it on our website, www.whistleblowersingular.org, or get it through Amazon. They've got some Busboys and Poets here in town. And this is a guide for citizen activists working with whistleblowers. In part, it's for whistleblowers, but it's also for activists. How to take advantage of the people who are willing to be the public's eyes and ears. How to get the advance warnings before it's too late. We're just dealing with the consequences of some sort of outrageous corporate behavior. And that's the next challenge on the horizon for all of us.
All right, that's Tom Devine. We're also on the, joined by phone by Michael McRae, both experts in the topic area of whistleblowing. We have another caller on the line. Caller, welcome to WPFW 89.3 FM, the Legacy Edition of We Ourselves. You are on the air with our guests. Good morning.
Hello, good morning, brother.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning, brothers. Yes, excellent program, excellent program. Brother, it seems to me this country is in denial. This country is schizophrenic. It seems to me that the masses of people in this country, the 99.5%, the 99.75%, it seems to me that it is high time that the masses of people in this country understand two things. Racism, white supremacy. In conjunction with that, the fiasco around 9/11 is utterly a fiasco. The committee, architects and engineers, it categorically exposes the Bush regime machination, because I don't understand people in this country. When you have over 95% of people in this country denouncing the Bush regime, and at the same time, the same Bush regime come up with a fiasco that Al Qaeda attacked this country. And the masses of people in this country believe George Bush regime. I don't understand that.
All right, thank you. Let's
I don't understand that.
Let's get
architecture engineers are fundamental.
Okay, Let's let our guest respond. Thank you for your call, but we're running out of, you know, running out of time a little bit.
Okay. Thank
you very much. Tom, Michael, do you, either of you have a response to that particular call?
Well, let Mike start.
Michael McRae?
Yeah. To touch on it just a little bit, I do think that, again, problems with racism and white supremacy and abuses of power in general. I mean, if, from a whistleblower's perspective, you know, dealing with Title VII cases, dealing with EEOC, again, in there are some who don't necessarily look at those types of cases as whistleblower cases. But again, what I found out and what we found is that anytime that you're reporting the violation of any law, you're a whistleblower. And so I think that, you know, the whole EEOC process, and again, I blew the whistle at USDA. And what I found out is that a lot of times the racial discrimination, it's almost, you know, when they talk about a gateway drug, it's almost like a gateway crime in the sense that a lot of the people that will do anything and will discriminate, violate people's rights in terms of EEO, you know, they're also violating other rules. So what you want to do is have a government that abides by the laws of the country, and you need to eradicate anyone who's violating the laws, no matter how large or how small.
I can add something on the 9/11 issue. We haven't had any whistleblowers saying that the Bush family organized 9/11, but are consistent with the caller's concerns. There's a whole series of whistleblowers who could have prevented 9/11, who found the evidence of either vulnerability to the attacks or to actually was onto the planning for the attacks and ready to pounce and were blocked by our government. They were silenced and smashed and lost their jobs for trying to sound the alarm of something that, in the best case scenario, was just too politically hot to handle for the bureaucracy. I'll give you one example is the FAA's red team. Their job was to go in and do undercover checks of the airports to see if they could defend themselves against a hijacking or other terrorist attack. And they had breached security with ease at the same gate at Boston's Logan Airport used by the hijackers on September 11th, just a couple of months before the hijacking. And they weren't allowed to write up their findings or follow through on it or see that the security breach was plugged. It was the same one that the hijackers exploited. Or there's Colleen Raleigh, who Time made their Person of the Year in beginning of 2003. And she was ready to go in, and she was an FBI attorney. She was ready to lead a raid and get the plans for the blueprints for the 9/11 hijacking days before it occurred, and she was blocked by the law enforcement bureaucracy. There's more examples like that. And whistleblowers, they don't just necessarily save us from abuses of power by our own government. They're the right way to fight genuine terrorist threats to America's safety by being prepared and following the evidence wherever it leads instead of canceling the Constitution and creating a new multi-billion-dollar homeland industrial security complex. That's playing games. The whistleblowers were the ones who honed in on the real threats to our country.
WPFW 89.3 FM, the Legacy Edition of We Ourselves. I'm Jared Ball, your host. Happy to be here with you. We're talking with Tom Devine and Michael McRae, experts on the topic of whistleblowing. And we're joined by our esteemed guests of the community who are calling in. We're going to get to them in just a moment. Just want to remind everybody that coming up at 11 o'clock, there's In Our Voices with Nkengi Touré, followed by Don't Forget the Blues with Ida Campbell at 12 o'clock. This includes the 12:30 p.m. blues calendar and 1 p.m. with Cleveland Spears, Mind Talk with Dr. Pamela Brewer at 3 o'clock, and then a long list of great programming taking you all into the evening. For more information on this program and more, you can check us out online at imixwhatilike.com, imixwhatilike.com. Let's go back to the phones. Caller, welcome to the air with your comment or question for our guest. Good morning.
Good morning. I don't know if you can hear me. Can you hear me?
Just fine, thank you.
Great, great. I caught the tail end of what was going on, and it's called whistleblowers, and I think this has to do with things that aren't right. But just to make a long story short, do you guys handle cases or expose or give media attention to people that have been abused by misconduct by judges and things of that nature, in other words. Judicial misconduct. I'm curious about that. Or is it just like big companies? Is that how it goes or what?
All right. Thank you very much for that call. And I'll ask Tom Devine and Michael McCray to respond to that question while also asking you both to give out any contact information for people wanting to follow up with either one of you.
Well, I'm working right now with a judge who's blowing the whistle on corruption in the court system. But for abuses of power by judges, Mike and I both work with an inspirational activist named Zena Crenshaw. Z-E-N-A, Crenshaw, just like it sounds. Like Google her, and she's set up a number of organizations that are judicial watchdogs to deal with corruption and abuses of power by the courts. And while Mike's talking, I'm going to pull up her contact information and see if we can help your listeners connect with Zena.
In fact, I can help with that right now. People can contact Zena Crenshaw at Z. Crenshaw, that's Z as in zebra, C-R-E-N-S-H-A-W at Comcast.net. And if you Google her, Zena Crenshaw, more that information and more comes up quickly and quite easily. Michael McCray, you had a response?
Yeah, actually, I think that's a great question. And I think that to me is the next level that we really have to look at whistleblowing activism. I mean, when you start to talk about people that are fighting the system, the establishment, it is the judiciary is where a lot of the effort needs to go. I mean, we can pass new laws and make new regulations or whatnot, but if they're being interpreted by a court system that's not really paying attention to the rights and the litigants and the, you know, I guess conservatives say it's judicial activism, but the judges have the ability to basically gut whatever efforts, all the First Amendment activism that we utilize, whatever the fruits of our labor. So, Zena is an excellent resource in terms of judicial corruption. There are a number of other groups that are also fighting that fight, but Zena's group is number one. It's something that we have to all, you know, it has to be a concerted effort, and we have to battle for the rights of individuals on all levels.
All right, let's grab another caller. Caller, welcome to the air. Good morning. You are on with our guests right here at WPFW 89.3 FM. Good morning.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air. Good morning.
I'm on air?
Yes.
Now, let me ask you something. Yeah, on September the 10th, 2001, Rumsfeld had a press conference where he said that the Pentagon could not account for $2.3 trillion. Also, that happened on Clinton also in 1999. Cynthia McKinney cross-examined the people about that. But most of all, listening to you talking about 9-11 was an inside job. No passenger plane hit the Pentagon.
All right, we appreciate that, and we've covered that, and we'll maybe do another program on that. But that doesn't immediately deal with our guest this morning talking about whistleblowing.
Yeah, okay, well, what about the $2.3 trillion?
Okay.
I mean, it's out there. We don't hear about it anywhere.
All right, thank you very much. Tom Devine, Michael McCray, we only have a few minutes left in the program. I want to let you all take a moment to respond to any comments or questions that have been raised that you haven't had a chance to respond to, but then also to make sure you have a moment to give off your contact information or any last bits of information or topics you want people to consider.
Okay. Well, Dr. Bob, first off, I want to thank you for providing me an opportunity to speak to you and to the Washington, D.C. audience. To reach me, you can reach me at, you can reach me at Michael McCray, M-I-C-H-A-E-L-M-C-C-R-A-Y, at acorn8.com, acorn8.com. And the website for the International Association of Whistleblowers is www.internationalwhistleblowers.org. The relationship that whistleblowers are forging with Pacifica, the relationship that whistleblowers have forged with Op-Ed News and some of the other blog sites, it's a wonderful thing. I also want to thank Marcel Reed. She's actually the protagonist of the book, Acorn 8, Race, Power, and Politics, Memoirs of an Acorn Whistleblower. and she has done yeoman's work. She's also a member of the International Association of Whistleblowers, and in forging a strong relationship between Pacifica and the whistleblowing community so that we can bring programs like this to the people and so that whistleblowers can speak out and get the word out. She's an invaluable asset.
Tom Devine?
To directly answer the questioner's point, the Pentagon whistleblowers are among the ones who have been just the most significant that I've worked with and literally have challenged trillions of dollars of false statements about how much money we're spending in the defense budget and just bureaucratic hidden agendas that are worse than friendly fire, responsible for about a third of the combat fatalities and injuries in Iraq due to not delivering life-saving equipment to protect our troops. Very, very important people for his point. As far as contact information, I want to do a little more for Zena Crenshaw. If you Google the National Forum on Judicial Accountability, that's another way to learn about one of the organizations that she helped start and specializes in corruption by the courts. And it's just such a good point. We can't depend on the courts to protect us. They're here about preserving the status quo, stability, don't change, follow precedent. Whistleblowers are challenging the status quo. The thing that works for them is solidarity. When they're isolated, it doesn't really matter how strong their legal rights are. They're the big underdogs. When GAP and other groups like ours is effective in matchmaking them, with all the groups in the public who are being sold out by abuses of power, then there's nothing more powerful than the truth. Instead of a bureaucracy surrounding an isolated whistleblower, it's the public surrounding that bureaucracy. And now its power just turns into a house of cards. Whistleblowers are people we need to listen to. They're the living histories who won't be rewritten. And their warnings, if we hear them, can change the course of history before unnecessary disasters happen. And help us at GAP. Our website is www.whistleblowersingular.org. Rally behind the whistleblowers that we champion and help us get some free speech rights for these government workers so they have the right to be public servants instead of bureaucratic yes people.
Tom Devine, Michael McCray, I thank you greatly for taking the time to join us this morning, and we look forward to following up on all of these topics in the not-too-distant future, and good luck with your continued work, and thank you again to you and all the callers who joined us this morning on the Legacy Edition of We Ourselves, right here on WPFW 89.3 FM. A lot going on. We again stand in solidarity, even if at times critical solidarity with the occupation movement. And those looking to increasingly challenge those in power to come off of what is really rightfully ours collectively, humanity's rights, and for our access to decent, lives and access to the resources and the benefits of society that we all help produce. So we want to encourage people to keep, supporting, watching, criticizing, you know, in solidarity, these efforts and hopefully pushing them more, radically and in organized fashions to the left. We stand in support, obviously, with what's going on out there in Oakland and the differences in these specific occupations, and look forward to hearing more from them. And as you would normally hear from Fred Hampton to you, we say peace if you're willing to fight for it. Again, check us out online at imixwhatilike.com. A lot more coming up. And see you next week. See you in the whirlwind. Peace.
Flash it. New things. This is a song. Got two lyrics. Very simple and plain. We can all sing together. Nobody has to feel left out. Join in. This is a song that people need to be singing right about now. When they're telling you that you can't, you shouldn't, you won't. Tell them this. Tell them
this.
Forget about me. I don't want my cell phone in line.
God don't work for the people. You have to understand, the people have to pay the price for peace. If you dare to struggle, you dare to win. If you dare not to struggle, then that night you don't deserve to win. Let me say peace to you if you're willing to fight for it. Let me say it in the spirit of liberation.